This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
On the program today, we will do our Friday thing because it's Friday. We will talk about going out to eat and then the Big Bang Theory from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 9th of September. Good as always to have you along, everybody. And we are going to get right to it. The week that was, the week to come in this and the global economy. Jordan Holman's at the New York Times. Catherine Rempel is at the Washington Post. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Catherine, let me start with you, and we'll go back a little bit to Jay Powell's Jackson Hole speech and then his remarks this week at the Cato Institute on monetary policy. And something I talked to Michelle Holder about yesterday, about the Fed chair saying, look, there is pain that is coming. And I want to take that apart a little bit because, first of all, pain for whom do you suppose?
Well, the pain that he's referring to is primarily the fact that unemployment might rise, that some people might lose their jobs as a result of the Fed raising interest rates, among other kinds mm-hmm. of unintended consequences, side effects that they don't want to happen, right? That they know that they're likely to happen.
Right.
And the parties that are most likely to be affected by that are going to be lower income people. They're more likely to be people of color. They're more likely to be more marginal workers, people with disabilities, for example, or people with past criminal records. Mm-hmm. Those are the people who lose their jobs first. And I think part of the reason why people are unhappy about this framing is, well, we should care most about those marginal households, those marginal workers. I think from Chair Powell's perspective, there many of those populations are also disproportionately hurt by letting inflation continue mm-hmm. essentially unabated. And that's the challenge here. It's like almost whatever bad thing happens somewhere in the macroeconomy, it often hurts the poor mm-hmm. more. That should be obvious on some level. You know, if you have more resources, you're less likely to be battered about by unfortunate macroeconomic trends. But that's the problem here. There's going to be economic pain, whether we're talking about high inflation or a hopefully temporary rise in unemployment.
Yeah, I'd say almost always when something bad happens in the macroeconomy, it affects those at the bottom end of the income spectrum. Jordan, let me go to Catherine's head fake there toward unintended consequences, right? Because we should be clear here and everybody should understand that Powell and the Fed look, nobody says they're asking for a recession. Nobody says they want that to come. But these are very intended consequences. This is kind of what happens when the Fed does what it's doing.
Exactly. And so then, you know, when retail CEOs hear that, they're like, yeah. Okay, we need to plan more conservatively. Because to Catherine's point, if someone's losing their job, that is a potential consumer for a retail company. Mm. So now they're thinking about, okay, do we need to lean more into private label, more off price or whatnot? So, you know, what Jay Powell is saying definitely does affect the way a corporation is then planning the rest of their 2022.
Right. And of course, consumers are, as we know, and as I say all the time, consumers are everything. Catherine, but look, one more thing, and then we're going to get off Jay Powell. What's he supposed to do? Sit on his hands? You know?
I think whatever he does, there will be downsides. That their hope, of course, is a soft or softish landing, that they can raise interest rates just enough that they don't end up putting people out of work, but they do cool demand and they do end up getting inflation under control. That's what the hope is. But it's a really difficult and narrow path to walk. And I don't know what the right answer is, frankly. And I am glad I am not in charge of setting interest rates, because no matter what they do, you know, there's a reasonable case to be made that it was not the right choice. It's a really difficult and unpleasant set of choices to select among.
Sorry, Catherine, just real quick, one last thing. It's clear that Powell has the entire Federal Open Market Committee behind him mostly, right? They are behind him. Lael Brainard made a speech yesterday, 2 days ago, whatever, the vice chair, who said, we're in this. I mean, they're echoing Powell's line.
Well, I think they need to be credibly hawkish.
Yeah.
The hope is that if they talk a really hawkish game, by which I mean, you know, that they say that they're really paying attention to inflation, then maybe they don't have to actually, in the end, raise rates as much, because markets will believe that the Fed is willing to take the punch bowl away. So if they are united, if they all say, like, no matter what, we are going to, like, we're willing to tolerate some pain, or not tolerate some pain, inflict some pain, whatever.
Right? Yeah.
You know, then maybe that in the end that will result in less pain, because the Fed won't actually have to tighten as much as it would otherwise if people don't believe the Fed means what it says.
Right. Super difficult problem. Jordan, CPI comes out. The Consumer Price Index comes out on Tuesday, without trying to hazard a guess as to what it's going to be. What is your sense of where the consumer economy is in terms of being ready for yet another high number?
I think from those numbers, we'll just continue to see the signs of, like, this great retail rebalancing that we've been seeing over the past few months about, like, the categories that were so strong in the beginning of the pandemic. You think about apparel, that actually you'll probably see a lower rate of inflation on those items for a handful of reasons. One of them being that retailers are actually discounting more of those items, so they're not trying to raise the prices on it. So I think it's going to be an interesting story when it comes to CPI on the reason why certain categories aren't seeing as high inflation. The things that everyone realizes every day are high, like rent and gas and whatnot, are still somewhat high, you know, compared to last year. But you will see some deflation in some categories.
Well, crush fingers on the clothes, because I need new clothes. Catherine, let's look globally here for a minute, right? The European Central Bank this week raised its benchmark interest rate 0.75 percentage point. Biggest bump in history. Took it from basically 0 to 0.75, which is a big deal. I heard Steve Liesman on CNBC the other day say, hey, it's every central bank for himself. They're all just trying to do what they got to do for themselves. I guess my question is, the Fed affects the entire global economy. How much do you think they're thinking about that at the big building on Constitution Avenue?
I don't know that it's their primary motivator. Probably they're paying attention to it. I mean, I think what you're getting at is that if you are an emerging market with a lot of dollar denominated debt, a strengthening dollar, which is one of the potential consequences of raising rates, makes it more difficult for borrowers in those countries to repay their dollar loans. And so that can cause some pain throughout the rest of the world. But, you know, if you are at the Fed, you have a dual mandate, which is maximum employment and stable prices, as I understand that
here,
to mean
domestically.
Right. So maybe they are not happy about, or not excited about, potential fallout in the rest of the world. But officially, that's not supposed to be what they're emphasizing. Yeah. Right. They're supposed to be thinking about the effects here.
Catherine Rempel at The Washington Post and Jordan Holman at The New York Times. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
Thanks.
Have a nice weekend. On Wall Street today, everything's fine. Move along. Nothing to see here. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We told you about the Beige Book when it came out a couple of days ago, I think. The Fed's regional and anecdotal summary of how the economy is doing region by region. Everything from the labor market to consumer spending to real estate and manufacturing and honestly everything in between. As I said, the Beige Book is anecdotal, which is to say reports from various regional Federal Reserve banks don't always agree. And one area in which those regions are seeing some different results is in loans to businesses. Marketplace's Justin Ho explains what's going on there.
A lot of businesses have been thinking twice about borrowing because interest rates are rising. hey, you know, I could have borrowed this at 4.5%. That made sense. But if I have to pay 6.5%, it may be a little tighter.
That's Dominic Miartan, CEO of Optus Bank in South Carolina. That's in the Richmond Feds district, which found that commercial loan demand has been modestly slowing. Miartan says he's seeing lending slow down in home construction and commercial real estate.
There's a reluctance from investors to buy office space just because of the anticipation of future stress.
The Chicago Fed said loan demand is down in its district, too. Chris Duncan is senior loan officer at LaSalle State Bank, about 90 miles southwest of Chicago. He says many of his clients are nervous about next year's economy.
Even though things haven't gotten terribly dire yet, they're holding off on doing much until there's a little bit more certainty in the outlook.
Meanwhile, other Federal Reserve banks said loan demand is up, including the banks of Cleveland, Atlanta, and San Francisco. Nathan Rogge runs Friendly Hills Bank in Southern California. He says some clients are taking out loans now because rates are rising.
On longer fixed rate opportunities, bigger pieces of equipment, real estate, they're wanting to take advantage of rates before they move more.
Rogge says other businesses, manufacturers and wholesalers, are borrowing to expand.
They feel like things have stabilized. They see a clearer direction for the company. Their clients are feeling more optimistic. And so everything just seems to be pushing forward.
Demand for loans might differ by region because local economies have been recovering at different speeds. For instance, Charlie Daugherty, an economist with Wells Fargo, says a lot of big cities have been slower to recover. On the other hand,
you look at Salt Lake City, for example, or Boise, or Phoenix, those areas have grown at a very robust rate and continue to do so.
Overall, Daugherty says the Fed reports are a sign that the growing economy has a lot of soft patches. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
All right, Justin had banking and business loans. Here is another slice of this economy to work through. How restaurants are doing in this late-stage pandemic economy. There are a couple of reports out on that topic, and the results, well, honestly, they're kind of mixed. Open Table, the reservation booking platform, says more people are dining out now than they did before the pandemic. But the National Restaurant Association's most recent survey says profitability is down. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab made some calls.
Ronald Sofranco owns a dozen restaurants, mostly in Pennsylvania, and he's noticed a mood shift among diners.
They're not smiling as much as they were. You know, it's like sometimes you get the irritated customer. You know, you just can't make them happy.
But he's not letting the occasional grump ruin his outlook because he says business is good again. Foot traffic at his restaurants is back to pre-pandemic levels, and alcohol sales are up.
We have this tremendous pent-up demand in the consumer. They want to go out. They want to enjoy themselves. They want to get back to the old days, if you will.
Okay, so people are happy to go out, but not necessarily happy while they're out? Those conflicting feelings could have a lot to do with how expensive it's getting to eat out. And all this puts business owners on edge. Hudson Reilly is with the National Restaurant Association.
The consumer has a lot of choices. And if their last restaurant experience for whatever price they paid and for whatever value they received at that restaurant experience, if that doesn't meet their expectations, they are quite quick to vote with their feet.
It's why restaurants are hesitant to raise prices as much as they need to. The last Consumer Price Index says the cost of food away from home is up more than 7.5%. That's a smaller increase than the cost of groceries, which means restaurant owners are eating some of the cost and making less money. Lori Torres owns Mallorca, a Spanish and Portuguese restaurant in downtown Cleveland.
I joked a couple weeks ago that I was just going to make the whole menu market price.
Like if she changed the price of a dish from $14 one day to $18 the next. In reality, she's raised prices once this year, about 7%. She's also not running her usual specials because they'd have to be so ridiculously priced to make a profit.
I know a lot of my customers are like, where's the sea bass? Or, you know, and I'm just like, right now, I just cannot do the sea bass.
For now, the salmon and tilapia on the menu will have to do. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Thank you.
Coming up.
So the sex is the most frequently censored topic in this TV show.
Well, all right then. First, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is up 377 today, almost 1.2%, 32,151. The NASDAQ gained 250 points, then it's 2.1%, closed at 12,112. The S&P 500 added 61 points, 1.5% rather, finished at 4,067. For the week, the Dow improved 2.7%. The NASDAQ up 4.1%. The S&P 500 grew 3.6%. Caterpillar drove up 3.4% today. The construction equipment maker said it's resolved a long-running tax dispute with the Internal Revenue Service, and get this, without incurring penalties. How about that? Deere grew 1%. Truckmaker Oshkosh rolled up 3% today. Kroger picked up 7.4%. Supermarket chain posted second quarter earnings that beat expectations. Walmart improved 0.3%. Bond prices down. Yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 3.32%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Two observations about the electric vehicle market here in the second half of 2022. Number one, it's getting real crowded. General Motors announced this week it's going to make an electric version of its Chevy Equinox SUV. And that gets us to number two. These cars ain't cheap. Chevy is trying to do something about that by pricing the Equinox at about $30,000. But the fact is that for a lot of, actually most, car buyers, right, EVs are still too steep, even with all the incentives. Marketplace's Lily Jamali has that one.
Pretty much every major car company wants a piece of the electric vehicle pie. But the batteries that power EVs, while a lot cheaper than they used to be, remain stubbornly expensive compared to internal combustion engines, says Gartner analyst Mike Ramsey.
So if you try to replace an engine on a vehicle versus trying to replace a battery on a vehicle, the price difference would be dramatic, 2 to 3 times the cost.
Ramsey says that's because car makers have prioritized increasing how far electric vehicles can travel on a single charge.
So even though the energy density is getting better, we're using the improvements we've gotten to get longer range instead of lowering the cost.
This year's spike in gas prices has helped supercharge demand for EVs, even as supply chain problems have affected production. Jessica Caldwell at Edmunds says since EVs are still a relatively small slice of the market, companies could focus on more affluent consumers, but they're not.
I think a goal for automakers would be to target a lower price vehicle and able to bring newer buyers and more buyers.
And the tax incentive for purchasing EVs in the new Inflation Reduction Act may help with that, says MIT professor Jessica Trancic. She's studied price differentials for EVs and says the incentives will help because they set an income cap for people to qualify, among other things.
I think it's really important to structure them in such a way that the benefits are equitably distributed across the population.
Because while EVs cost more up front, she says they can be cheaper than traditional vehicles when you add in fuel and maintenance costs over time. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Something like 70 cities in China, including the big economic centers like Shanghai and Shenzhen that we've all heard about. Also, though, Chengdu out in the southwest, Apple makes a bunch of stuff there, are in full or partial lockdown. Beijing is sticking to its zero COVID policy, economic repercussions notwithstanding. And for those not actually there, it can be kind of hard to understand just how much control the government has over daily life in China. Take, just for instance, television censorship. Back in 2014, a handful of American shows, including the sitcom The Big Bang Theory, just disappeared from Chinese streaming services, only to return more than a year later, but with a whole bunch of edits. Mandy Zhu is a data journalist who did a little experiment, a case study, if you will, to figure out exactly what got censored. She wrote it up for The Pudding. Mandy, welcome to the program.
It's glad to be here.
So tell me, first of all, how you became a fan of The Big Bang Theory.
So The Big Bang Theory is one of the American TV shows that I've been watching since high school. It's kind of my go-to show whenever I feel stressed out. And I'm the kind of person who constantly feels stressed out. So I ended up with watching the show over and over again. And to some point, I'm just so familiar with the plot and the characters and everything.
Right. No, I've been there. And with the Big Bang Theory as well. And I should say, just so everybody knows, I'm a huge fan of the Big Bang Theory as well. But so tell me about what you did. And then I want to talk about what you found.
Sure. So I was watching the show earlier this year on Youku, which is one of the biggest streaming websites in China that was backed by Alibaba, the income merchants giant. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that there's some weird jumps and cuts in the show. I don't want to be like paranoid or crazy. So I sat down, watched the censored version, which is the Youku version, and the original version side by side. I took notes, put together a spreadsheet, including how many scenes are cut and what's the content.
You know, it's funny because The Big Bang Theory is one of the most innocuous sitcoms. I mean, it's got a laugh track for crying out loud. And who does that nowadays? Yeah. But there were certain type of content that you did the data journalism thing and you discovered that certain types of content basically always get cut. What were those categories?
Yeah. So the sex is the most frequently censored topic in this TV show, which is TV 14. Any sexual content, like a mention of explicit body part or like, verb like have sex. Also, anything related to LGBTQ identity. So like gay, lesbian, all those things all cut out. And any mention of Russia or North Korea or China gets cut out as well.
So even outside those categories, though, there are some that are, in my book, harmless. Let me run it by you and we'll see what you say. So let's play the censored one of the orange chicken.
My apologies, Leonard. I'm only as good as my teacher.
I need to use your window.
And there's the cut. Right. So there's the cut, right? You can hear the cut in the laugh track. Now let's play the version that actually aired here in the States.
My apologies, Leonard. I'm only as good as my teacher.
Why are you learning Chinese?
I believe the Sichuan Palace has been passing off orange chicken as tangerine chicken, and I intend to confront them.
If I were you, I'd be more concerned about what they're passing off as chicken.
I mean, that was kind of funny, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. Like, this is kind of the thing that I don't get it, why those company tried to cut those out. Because I mean, like some people may argue that this kind of joke might imply that all these Chinese food restaurants are not good. Mm. But I mean, like this is just like one specific Chinese restaurant in Los Angeles. It doesn't like represent all these Chinese restaurants.
Okay, so here comes the big marketplace turn. China will be, at some point, the biggest economy in the world, right? It just will. Given demographics, given industrial base, given all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that happens when you're the biggest economy in the world, as the United States has enjoyed for many a decade now, is that your cultural exports gain new relevance. And I guess my question is, what do you suppose this means for Chinese soft power and cultural exports as their economy grows in dominance?
China has been seeking to develop its soft power many years. But meanwhile, I can feel that Chinese government is still very serious about this censorship. Like, it cannot allow those content creators to have the space and the room to create, to shoot whatever they want. And if those content producers don't have this creativity to make great works, then I don't see how the softer power can be strong.
Mandy Zhou, she is a graduate student at Northeastern, in fact, and also writing every now and then as a data journalist, this time in the pudding, about Big Bang Theory. Mandy, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time and the story.
Thank you, Kai, for the time.
The This final note on the way out today, saw this in the Wall Street Journal, and honestly, the first thing I thought was, huh, that's interesting, and maybe not great also. The Journal reports that the team at Meta, which is to say Facebook's parent, the team that is part of the company's try at figuring out the problems with its products, is being dismantled. Responsible Innovation is the name of the group. The challenges and downsides and problems of what some of what Facebook does in this society, you are likely familiar with. All right, off we go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context, or perhaps Hollywood context is a better tagline today. I don't know. So does anybody know which Fed chair appeared on The Big Bang Theory? Season 9, episode 16? Anybody? Anybody? Ben Bernanke and his wife, Anna, February of 2016. It's kind of a cameo, so you got to look closely. But he's right there if you know what you're looking for. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Neil Scarbrough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.